He's been a great asset to you. And for a time, he convinced Saul of his unreasonableness towards David. That things were like they were before. And David played for Saul, and things were good. And yet it wasn't long until once again war broke out. And so Saul would send David to war. And once again, David would come back victorious. And once again, we see Saul's jealousy, rage. How does it happen? Now Saul, as he comes back and David's playing for him, he tries once again to kill him with his spear. How does it happen that a proven king, a warrior, at close range, misses with his spear over and over again? How does that happen? Well, would you say God is protecting David? And you might think maybe David should be getting the idea that Saul doesn't like him, right? Well, after this event, it says that David goes home to his wife Michal. But following him are Saul's soldiers. Michal sees it. She warns David, they're going to kill you in the morning. And she helps him, as she should, and lets him down to escape. And then she lies to the soldiers in the morning when they come for him, telling him he's sick. Saul says, I don't care if he's sick. Drag him out. I'm going to kill him. And we find that she has lied. He's not there. Well, it says David then flees to Samuel as a refuge, a prophet of his God. He goes there in time of trouble. He turns to God through Samuel. After all, Samuel would be the best one to go to for advice of what to do in this stressful situation. And we think we have stress. And you imagine someone trying to kill you all the time. Well, Saul could not understand that David was under special protection of God. And no matter what he would do, that God would find a way to protect him. In fact, we see in this passage that he even had Saul's men, when they chased him down to Samuel, he even had his men. In fact, Saul himself was end up prophesying before the Lord. You know, what can we picture for us today is that may we be like David in times of trouble. May we turn to our God and we recognize where our refuge is. It's in Him. And may we cling to the truth of His Word and strive to be holy because He is holy. May we always, whether we're in danger or trouble or sickness or health, seek His protection and His direction for our lives. And we do that through two things, through His Word and through a prayer that we go to Him. Chapter 20, we see that David consults Jonathan. And we see the loyalty once again of Jonathan. David asks him, what have I done? What have I done that your father keeps trying to kill me? Jonathan says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't see that. Well, David responds with a statement that I'm sure many of us may have thought one time or another, that there's just one step between me and death. One step between me and death. You ever thought that sometimes? I'm sure some of us have. You know, that could be true. We may just be one step between here and death. Or it just may appear that way to us. But there's one thing that we can be certain of. And that is we cannot die. Get this. We cannot die until the purpose of God concerning us is accomplished according to His will. Think about that. Read Psalm 139. Jonathan offers David his service. They come up with a plan to find out once and for all Saul's trying to kill him. You know the story, how the story of the arrows. If Saul is against him, then he'll shoot the arrow over the top of the lad. If he's for him, if he's not trying to kill him, he'll shoot it to the side. And we know the account, so now you know the rest of the story. It's a picture of a true friend, a friendship that stood on the foundation of God. And because of that foundation, David and Jonathan were able to lay aside any selfish ambition, any self-love, regard of others. They regarded others as more important than themselves. As believers, we have a friend like that, don't we? We have Jesus Christ, who gave Himself up for us. In fact, He gave His life for us, a sacrifice for us, for rebellious, polluted sinners like us. Saul gets angry at Jonathan, says, for making excuses. He tries to even kill Jonathan. And I think maybe we might say Saul's got a bad habit here of trying to kill people with a spear. And so now Jonathan knows he's correct, and he warns him. And then they come together, and it says they wept together. And they depart. And David now becomes an outcast. Chapter 21 begins with David with Ahimelech, the great-grandson of Eli, a priest. And David is in distress, and I think we would be too, as he flees to Nob, the city of priests. It's located about 1 mile northeast of Jerusalem. And here we see one flaw begin to show in David. He lies. He deceives Ahimelech about why he is there. He's afraid that somehow Saul would find out. And he purposed in himself that it's okay to lie for the purpose of saving his own life. But what does God tell us about liars? He hates them. It's an abomination to Him. See, what is sinful is never acceptable because of circumstances. It wasn't acceptable. And we'll see that David's lying will lead to many deaths. David asks Ahimelech for bread and for a sword. And Ahimelech gives David the holy bread, which was only for priests. But only after going to the Lord about it. And we know that from chapter 22, verse 10. Ahimelech recognized that it was a moral obligation to preserve David's life by providing him the bread, and it superseded any ceremonial regulations concerning who or could or could not eat that showbread. Well, Jesus used this example Himself. In Matthew 12, verses 1 through 6, when He taught the true meaning of the Sabbath law, where mercy is preferred to sacrifice and ritual must give way to moral duties. Remember, they were in the fields eating, picking the grain on the Sabbath day. And Jesus uses this example. We see Ahimelech gives David the bread and the sword also of Goliath. We see that David had taken the sword in the head. He evidently has given the sword to the priest to keep. He now returns it to him. The sword of Goliath. But there's still trouble brewing, because watching all this happen, is a man named Doeg, the Edomite. Doeg is a man that was an Edomite who has converted, supposedly, to Judaism, the Hebrew religion. And he may have been there because of the Sabbath. He may have been there because he needed ceremonial cleansing. We're not really sure why he is there, but we will see him again in chapter 22. We see now that David has the bread and the sword, he flees to Gath, where Achish is king. Achish is a Philistine king. It was a very dangerous place for David to go, because they hate him. They know what he's done, and he's carrying Goliath's sword. A sword that David said, there's none other like it in all the land. You think they didn't see that? Absolutely, they seen it. And they took him to Achish. And Achish began to ask him questions. And David, it says, became very afraid. And so he comes up with a marvelous plan to feign madness. He begins to scribble on the wall and to drool in his beard. And Achish thinks he's crazy. Get rid of this guy. I don't want him in my house. How dare you bring a madman to my house? And so he lets him go. And he flees. And he goes to Adullam. And he goes to the cave in Adullam. And his relatives hear of it, and they come to meet him there. In fact, there's about 400 of them that come. And it's interesting that they tell about these people, what they're like. It's They're people that are in distress, people who are in debt, people who are discontented. What a motley crew he's got, right? And they all are going to be his army, 400 of them. They all agree to serve him. Isn't it an amazing picture of what sometimes God uses to bring about his purpose? What a picture it is of Christ also, isn't it? He receives all who comes unto him, all that the Father gives him. It reminds me of 1 Corinthians 1:20. It says, "Where is the wise, the scribe, the disputer of the age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. The base things of the world, the things which are despised, God has chosen." See, nothing happens by chance. God is a sovereign God. He's in control of all things. And David puts all these men into service for him, all those who will suffer with him and for him. Those 400 men will eventually grow to about 600. And David, during all this stress, all this running for his life, has not forgotten one important issue: his parents. And so he provides a safe place for his parents. He takes them to Moab, across the Dead Sea to Moab. Interesting that he takes them there. Where is his grandmother from? Who is his grandmother? Ruth. Where did she come from? Moab. And he takes her there. He takes his parents back there for safety. Well, we should all do the same. Have such respect for our parents. Whether they're believers or not makes no difference. We're to honor our parents, to love them. Well, Saul makes inquiry then. He hears of David's gallivanting around, and he makes inquiry from the people in Gibeah. And he hears of David's where he hears of David's presence. And he wants to know as he goes there, is there anyone here who is loyal to me anymore? See, he's considering them all his enemies. And none of them will come forward and tell him where David is. But, as always, there's always a Judas around the corner, is there not? And so Doeg the Edomite spills his guts. And he tells him all that went on in the city of Nob. And so Saul sends for the priests. They bring them all before him and he questions them. We see that Ahimelech stands up for David, but Saul finds him guilty and pronounces his death sentence. And he has tells his men to kill him. But it's interesting here that none will kill the priests. And so he turns to Doeg and he says, "You kill him." And so Doeg does. He kills all 85 of them. Then he proceeds to go to the city of Nob and he kills every man, woman, and child, all the beasts in the field, everyone, except one priest got away. His name was Abiathar. And he runs to David and he tells David of what's happened. And David says, "I knew this was going to happen." And he takes the blame upon himself for their deaths. See, we can never escape the consequences of sin, can we? We may be forgiven, but the consequences of that sin are always going to be with us, as we'll see later on in David's life. Well, David offers Abiathar a place of safety and to be secure. Well, what can we learn from this? Well, just as Doeg set his foot in the tabernacle, just as far as David did, is proof for us that we can know little about someone's heart. We can't really look at anyone's heart and know what's in it. Even those who come into the house of the Lord. Because some will come in simplicity of heart with a genuine desire to serve, to worship God. But others will come just to observe and will prove to be accusers of brethren. See, only God can determine between a Doeg and a David. God looks at the heart, while man looks at the outward appearance, as he said in choosing David. All the trials and the distractions that David has been through is evidence we'll see that most of the time he was in and he found communion with his God. And he found comfort in him when there was nowhere else to turn. And you can read that in Psalm 91. Well, David then rescues Keilah, which is about 18 miles southwest of Jerusalem in Judea. The Philistines were robbing them, stealing their grain. And twice he asked God, through the ephod that Abiathar had brought. He asked him through the ephod for God's directions, and God tells him to go there to protect them. Saul hears about it. He's on his way down there now, and he really thinks he has them this time because there's only one way in and one way out of the city. He's got them trapped. But David goes to the ephod again and asks of God, will these people help me or will they turn against me? And God tells him, they will turn against you. And so David, he just simply says, okay, and he disbands his army. And one by one, they leave and they go in separate directions. And Saul, when he hears of it, just says, how can I fight that? I don't even know who they are. And so he gives up and turns back. What can we learn from this? Well, David could have complained, couldn't he? He could have cried out to God, look, God, all I do is good and all I receive is evil. You ever feel that way sometimes? All you ever receive back for doing good is evil? That's what David could have said. But he loves them. Despite his love for him, they're for these people, his own people, they're doing this. Because they thought he was their adversary. But isn't that like Christ is for us? No matter what he did in his earthly ministry, there were those who were condemning him for it and said it was evil. But he also never complained, did he? He laid down his life. He was being beaten, spit upon, his beard being pulled out, a crown of thorns driven upon his head, and his hands and his feet nailed and hung on a cross. And he never complained. And he did it because of what we have done. Well, just as David was brought to ephod to find God's will, God has given us the Scriptures, the Word, to find out His will, to search and to study for direction, for answers in life's problems that we have. And just as David was very direct in his questions of God, in seeking His will, God has given us that ability to go directly to Him in prayer, to ask for guidance when we are at a loss of what to do. You ever been to that point? You fall on your knees and say, God, I don't know what to do. I ask for your help. See, God knows not only what will be, but also what would have been if He had not stopped it. And so He knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and how to render judgment to any man according to his works. We see that David will now go into the strongholds to hide out, where he's comforted once again by Jonathan. And Jonathan is pointing David to the throne, once again confirming that David's position will be on the throne of Israel. And he tells him, even my father knows it. Well, then the Ziphites, they come and they tell David, or tell Saul, they know where David's hiding. And sure enough, it ends up that they do know, and so they go out. They are about to have him encircled, about to have him captured, when all of a sudden, war breaks out. Imagine that. War breaks out, and Saul has to leave. He has to go to protect the country. You think God's not protecting David? God is delivered because of dependence upon him. And he says to you and me today, in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge me, and I will direct your paths. In chapter 24, we see that David will now spare Saul's life. God delivers Saul into David's hands. Saul and 3,000 of his men were seeking David, and they stop at a cave. It says, just by chance, David's men were inside the cave. And what do they men want to do? They want to kill Saul. David says, no, I cannot do that. I cannot put my hand upon the man of God. And so they convince him to cut the robe off. But it says, notice in that passage, it says that he was very troubled by that, even that he did it, that he cut the strip of cloth off. Why? Because in those days, to cut that robe meant to touch the cloth, the clothing of someone, meant that you actually touched that person. And he didn't want to be associated with putting his hand upon the anointed of God. Well, he returned good for evil. What an example for us. Not to be overcome by evil, but to overcome evil with good. David shows his innocence in this passage by his actions three times. David was falsely accused concerning Saul. And David shows Saul, he could have killed him. I could have killed you. He could have been his own avenger. He understood. David understood that when men wrong you, that God will make it right. But He'll do it in His time, not ours. We see now that Saul will acknowledge his fault. Saul is overcome by David's kindness. I think I would have been too, wouldn't you? In fact, it says he wept because of it. But he didn't repent of his sins. He didn't turn from them. Well, God has delivered, and David has passed the test. And he asked David to swear that he will not cut off his descendants and will not destroy his name from his father's household. And David agrees, and they separate. But David still doesn't trust Saul, would you? I probably wouldn't, though. Instead, he goes deeper and deeper into the wilderness, trying to escape from Saul. In chapter 25, we see the death of Samuel. All of Israel, it says, mourned at Samuel's death, and for good reason. Because Samuel was a faithful judge and a prophet. His godliness was demonstrated by his life of trusting in the Lord. He was the bridge between the judges and the kings. He was the last of the judges and the first of the office of the prophets that would go through and continue on in from the Old into the New Testament. Samuel was the buffer between David and Saul. And after his death, we see that David will still continue to go deeper and deeper in the wilderness, trying to escape from Saul. We now also brings on the story of David and Abigail. And someone once said, to be great is to be misunderstood. Most people, when you ask them if they know about David, what will they remember? Bathsheba and his sin, him committing murder. They remember our sins. They say, how could David do this? How could he commit such a sin? And yet, what did God say about David? He is a man after my own heart. In this chapter, you begin to see David's character and examine it a little bit. We'll see how much David really is like us. He is exactly like us. It started with a rich man named Nabal, which means fool. And rightly so, because he acted like a fool. David had been a protector of his flocks and his men while in the wilderness. David's food was running low. He sends down his men to ask for food from Nabal, and he pretends that he doesn't even know who David is. He rejects him. David then decides, when he hears of it, he's going to go destroy them. He is livid. He is angry. Without consulting God, he is determined to go and kill them. Abigail knows her husband only too well. When she's told of the circumstance, she creates a feast and sends it out before, and then she rides out behind him to stop David from avenging himself upon her husband. She realizes what her husband is, a fool. Her servants realize that he's a fool. And it says she meets David, she falls down before him, she pleads to David not to act like her husband, not to do this terrible thing. And she asks for forgiveness, and she gives honors and blessings to David and asks him, don't avenge yourself upon us. And how does David respond? David responds with a praise to God for sending her to stop him from shedding bloodshed, from avenging himself by his own hand. Any of us ever been to that point where you just want to take things in your own hand? You don't want to consult God? We maybe don't consult God. We just do things in our own strength. And we usually end up paying for that, don't we? We need to consult God. Let Him do it. He is the avenger, not us. See, when we forget God, then we're just like David is here. And God will leave you to your own heart. That's one reason why we need to pray to God. And how does the Lord's Prayer go? Not my will, but thy will be done. Thy will be done. It marks another phase in David's life where sin now will begin to enter until one day he will become a murderer. A man whom God called after his own heart. Does that mean that God approves of David's lifestyle? Absolutely not. But he permitted it. In chapter 26, we see that Saul once again goes after David. And once again, Saul's life is spared by David. You remember the story? They have him in a camp. And David comes upon them and they're all asleep. So David tries to get someone to volunteer. And finally he gets Abishai to agree to go with him down into the camp. That's kind of dangerous, you think about it. You're going to walk down in the middle of 3,000 men without getting caught. And they find Saul. They go and they find Saul asleep. Imagine that. And at the head of his is his spear. And what does Abishai want to do? He wants to kill him. He says, give me just one shot. One time is all it'll take. David says, no, you cannot do that. And so they took his spear and his water and they go. They leave. And they leave undetected. And they get up on the mountaintop. And they begin to holler down at Saul and his men, especially Abner. Abner was his general. And he hollers at, hey Abner, what are you doing? How come you're not protecting your king? What are you doing? Sleeping on a job? You deserve to be killed. And who recognizes his voice? Saul does. Saul recognizes who it is. The conversation once more Saul realized that he has sinned, that he has committed an error, that David once again could have killed him. But David had refused to stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed. And so they part their own way. In chapter 27, we see that David now has gone back to Achish in the Philistine camp. He's probably still thinking, I'm going to die at the hand of Saul. And so he goes to the Philistines with 600 men. Now it's arisen to that. Achish is the king of Gath, the Philistines, and he's heard about David, and he's heard about Saul attacking him, and how Saul is wanting to kill him, and so he welcomes him back this time. We wouldn't. He's got 600 soldiers. He'll help the Philistines fight their battles. Well, it says that David lived there about a year and 4 months. But he lived in a city called, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but I'm going to call it Zachik. It was away from the Philistines. Because he really didn't want to be associated with them, even though he was there. And he did a lot of fighting while he was there. But he fought the enemies of Israel. And it says everywhere he'd go, he would kill every one of them, leaving no one left alive, so that they might come back and tell the Philistines. And in fact, he makes Achish think that David is going to be his servant forever. Well, it concludes this morning's lesson, but there's five things that I'd like for us to remember. There are so many things in this passage. So there's so much here that we just don't have time to look at. But five things I want us to leave with that I hope you'll remember. The first is that God provides for and protects His servants through all trials of our life. God provides. He protects through any trial we may have in our life. Number two, that true character is revealed under pressure. David was under tremendous pressure. And true character is revealed under pressure. And you may be under pressure this morning. I hope if you are that you're thinking that it's God revealing my true character. Number three, that God will use the sinful activities of godless men to accomplish His will. Sinful activities of godless men God will use to accomplish His will. And number four, trials are used by God to bring us to maturity. David was a boy, and God is maturing him to a king. And number five, just as David was, we must be faithful during our trials. And we will have trials, as it tells us in Scripture.